You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole, and I am excited to be back. We are surrounded by gigantic dinosaurs once again. I don't know why we keep coming to these islands. And with me, none other than Scott McCullen. Scott, seriously, why do we keep coming back to these islands?
Because life finds a way.
Or is it stupidity finds a way?
Well, we always ask if we could. We never stop to ask if we should.
This is true. This is true. So, we're going to be talking about Jurassic World Rebirth. There's no colon because we're, I guess, trying to breathe life into what we thought was a, you know, dead franchise. But before we get into that, you can find us all over social media. You can follow the 602 Club at X Twitter, at the 602 Club. Of course, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM with the entire network. Find us online at trek.fm. You can also find us in our listeners only discussion group for listeners from all over the world to join the Babel Conference. And you can just type in Babel into the search field in Facebook. You find us there. And of course, you can also find us on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM, as well as the entire network, of course, at Trek FM. So, Scott, you know, we thought in many ways that Dominion would kind of be the final film in the Jurassic World series, you know, and yet we decided to rebirth the story by picking up the story a few years after the end of Dominion, and that Neo-Jurassic period where dinos are all over the Earth is coming to an end because, well, as many scientists would tell you these days, the world really wouldn't be able to sustain dinosaurs because of the ways in which the atmosphere has changed. And so we've pared dinosaurs down because of that, or at least nature has pared dinosaurs down at that point to tropical bands around the equator. And so I first just wanted to ask you kind of how you feel about we spent all of this time basically releasing dinosaurs into the wild of the world. And now, instead of it being Jurassic World anymore, we're almost basically back to being just a Jurassic Islands park. I mean, you know, how do you feel about that as the kind of new impetus for these Jurassic stories?
I'm not a fan personally, because the way Dominion ended, it really felt like we now have to learn how to coexist. That really seemed to be the message at the end of Dominion, because now the last time I rewatched Dominion getting ready for Rebirth, I watched the extended cut of Dominion for the first time. So I'll be honest, I don't remember what's in the extended cut that's not in the theatrical cut. But the extended cut has a beautiful bookend where it starts 65 million years ago and then ends today. And the beauty of those bookends, at least as I saw in the extended cut, is that you see dinosaurs in the exact same sort of habitats, only coexisting with modern mammals animals that wouldn't have existed back during the Jurassic and Cretaceous periods. So the promise at the end of Dominion was literally a Jurassic world.
Right. Yes.
Where the dinosaurs are now just part of that.
Truly living up to the name of what they titled the series, which was Jurassic World. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it feels like a cheat to me that we need to shrink that. Mm-hmm. It's like hitting a reset button. Yeah. Instead of rebooting, it's like a reset where, okay, we don't want to go that direction anymore. Mm-hmm. Oh, so we're just going to wave our hand and come up with an expositional reason why we're not going to do that. And you know what? I kind of wish if they had kept on, if they truly are going to continue this, that would have been more interesting, because Dominion started to play with the idea of dinosaurs among us. What does the world look like? You know, you've got the black market. You got, like, basically the cockfights with dinosaurs. Exactly. You've got poachers. So I was interested to see where that went. And just when they start to give it to me, I feel like the rug's been pulled out from under me. And now we're kind of starting back from square zero. And I'm not happy, especially since I watched Dominion literally the same day that I went to go see Rebirth. Mm-hmm. So that was really fresh in my mind when I went into Rebirth.
Yeah. See, I'm right there with you. I felt like, and this is the thing too. Dominion felt like a natural end to just the series overall, in the sense of where do you go from here? And I think that by basically restricting us back to different, like, small pockets of our world now, where these dinosaurs can still live, we're trying to get back to the spirit of the park films, right? If you take Jurassic Park, Lost World, and Jurassic Park 3, all of those take place on islands that were connected with the original Jurassic Park. And, of course, you know, we come back to the States for just a few minutes where a T-Rex can rampage through L.A. And, you know, Steven Spielberg can make his Godzilla movie for about 5 minutes, and then we return, right? But so I think the thing to me was I didn't really understand what this movie was going to do. I went in, I love these films. I enjoy all of them in some shape or form. But trying to go backwards seemed strange to me. And then it also just felt like restricting to the story, because now I felt as though what we're left with plot-wise is we have to think of a good reason to go to these places and screw with the dinosaurs again, you know? And I didn't hate the reason that we're traveling to the island. I thought that was interesting because there are different medications that have been coming out where we've been studying, different animal species and venoms and all these type of things that are creating these really important pharmaceuticals that we use these days. So didn't hate that idea that dinosaurs might have something that could, do something for us as humans if we were able to capture that information and then, utilize that.
But wasn't that what Biosyn was doing in Dominion? So it just feels like I think this is going to get into something that my overall thought, know me, every time I come in for a drink at the 602 Club, I just kind of lay out my overall thoughts at the beginning because I can't help myself. But it just feels like so much of this movie felt recycled.
Oh my God, you took the word right out of my mouth. Thank you.
I mean, they literally, like, even the two, and we'll get to this later, but I'm just so you've got the dino for pharmaceutical research plot, which is kind of which is that weird subplot with Biosyn that I just didn't really enjoy about Dominion, because that Biosyn just kind of came out of nowhere when iGen's been the whole deal through the rest of the film series. And then you also have probably, in my opinion, the two best sequences in the movie, but they're sequences from Michael Crichton's novels that never got used in the adaptations of those novels. So they just decided, well, let's take the one from Jurassic Park and the one from Lost World that never made it into the movies, and let's throw it into this one. So it so that's my issue, is that the entire existence of the film just feels like combing through the trash, you know, they're dumpster diving for ideas.
Well, I think I cannot agree with you more. And what it came down to me is that this is a Jurassic Park remix, because there are only bits and pieces of this that really have a lot to do with the world films. Really, this just feels as though we're going to take the things from the original three movies, basically, and we're going to remix them. And every moment you're going to be thinking to yourself, well, hey, I remember that from Jurassic Park. Oh, I remember that from The Lost World. Oh, I remember that from Jurassic Park 3, you know.
Oh, this, I remember this from the books.
Exactly. You know, exactly. Because again, like the rest of the plot, right? And I think you rightly discussed this and brought up the idea that, you know, Biosyn as a company and what it was doing here with the stuff that it bought from InGen when it went out of business and hit bankruptcy. And the types of discoveries they were trying to make by having these dinosaurs and the genetic manipulation that they were doing. I mean, that whole movie, Dominion, is really about trying to control food sources through genetic engineering, which, you know, very relevant to the world we still live in. But it would make sense if they were trying to also capitalize with these dinosaurs in the pharmaceutical market. And again, like I thought that that was, I mean, if we're going to try and think of a reason to go back to messing with dinosaurs again and put ourselves in a dangerous situation, the idea of a pharmaceutical drug that is going to help us maybe not necessarily cure heart disease at this moment, but be able to create a medication that helps push it off for like 20 years for people. I mean, if you think about that, I mean, the wonders that that could do for people in their like 50s and 60s, you know, people could be living to 100 years old, you know, or more in really good condition. So, I mean, that's not a terrible idea. But I think when it came especially to that plot point, the problem was, and this was the beauty of the original Jurassic Park film, and I think what they were able to also accomplish with Jurassic World as a film, is that the end, before you get to the crazy, the end really is spending the first 30 to 40 minutes of the film just with your main characters to help us know them so that we can kind of care about them, so that by the time they get to danger, I'm worried for their safety. And I felt like that one of the things that this plot doesn't do a great job of is to really allow us to get to know a character like Zora or Henry Loomis, or, you know, even this dad, you know, who's on a trip with his kids that gets mixed up into all of this. Like, I don't really get a time to spend with any of these characters, because the thing just basic, the movie wants us to get to the island and start like messing with dinosaurs so we can get in trouble, more than it wants to care about making me care about the people who are going to be in danger because of the dinosaurs.
Well, because they're stock characters.
Yes, agreed.
That's,
yes.
That's the thing. They didn't create actual characters. They gave you character types. You know, you've got the mercenary. You've got the shady guy working for the pharmaceutical company. You've got the wide-eyed scientist. You've got the dad with the kids. Because, yes, kids always have to be in danger in these Jurassic movies. We have to create reasons for kids to be in this situation so they can be threatened by the dinosaurs. You know, that was my biggest thing, is that they were never real people to me. Like, they just were a they were a character who functioned because this character needed to do this because the plot said so.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. And really, the problem with the plot is it's so thin to get us to that place. I really do need to care about these characters. You know, I think, again, that's the beauty of the original Jurassic Park, right? Is that you spend so much time with Grant and Sadler and Ian Malcolm and the kids, so that by the time that things hit the fan in the park, when the power goes out because of Dennis Nedry, you buy it, right? You're invested. Same thing, in all honesty, I think, with the world films, right? You know, especially that first one. We spend enough time with Claire, the kids, and then Owen, right? So that there's these relationships. And then there's this whole park that, you know, unlike the original Jurassic Park, is filled with people, you know? And so, right. Yes, I mean, it was frustrating because, again, the rest of this plot really does feel like just a combination of Lost World and Jurassic Park 3 with bits of the original film thrown in and bits and pieces from the world films to kind of help get the story, as you know, with the mutant dinosaurs and everything. And again, like, I got to ask you about this. Okay, we have another island now. Like, how many islands have been involved?
Okay, that... Yeah, okay, so that was the thing, because when I heard that it was about... This was the research facility for the original park. In my mind, I'm going, but wasn't that what Isla Sonar was in Lost World? Yeah. Wasn't that supposed to be, like, the research facility for Isla Nublar? Like, I'm going back to, because I read the books
back when
I was a kid.
I mean, Jurassic Park is actually an incredible book. If you've never read it, I mean, gosh, read that book because it's so good.
And it's so different from the movie. Yes. Like, you can read the book and have a completely different experience than you do watching the movie, because characters are completely different. Like, the Jurassic Park movie, the first one from 1993, I understand the changes that they made. Yeah, they made summer blockbuster Spielberg changes to that film. Because the characters in the novel, you are almost rooting for them to get eaten.
A lot of them are very unlikable. Yes. So.
Because that was kind of Crichton's point of, why are you doing this? Yeah. Like, Crichton was really good at, like, using science fiction as the, I want to warn you 100%. About what's coming. And so, but this one, it just, I don't care enough for them to live. I don't care enough for them to die. You know, like you said, in the original Jurassic Park films, you're rooting for everyone. You're rooting for most of the people to get out of there, you know, or some of them, like Nedry, or in the book, like Hammond, because Hammond's a complete SOB in the book. You know, you're rooting for them to die. This one, I just didn't care one way or the other. And I spent too much of the movie like you, I'm picking it apart, not intentionally, not because I want to pick it apart, because I enjoy these Jurassic Park films. I think Jurassic Park 3 is a very underrated film. Like, I don't, like, when I finally watched it years later, I didn't understand the hate it got, because I was like, this is a good movie. You know, it's a fun movie. You know, the only movie up to this point that I didn't quite enjoy was Fallen Kingdom, because those are actually the two movies I did not see in theaters. Were Jurassic Park 3 and Fallen Kingdom. Every other Jurassic film I've seen in theaters. So I don't go into not wanting to love these movies. They're Jurassic movies. I've been engaged with them since I was 10 or 11 years old. You know, it's so... It takes something for me to look at a movie and all I'm doing is saying, okay, you checked that box, you checked that box, you used that from that, you used that from this. It's like you were cribbing pieces of recipes, and I could tell in the final product. I could go, that's a little part.
Yeah.
That's a little three. That's a little book. Okay. And I feel like the movie, for it to be successful for me, it needed to, like, if you're going to blend those kind of elements, it needed to blend seamlessly in a way that I'm not watching the film thinking about how you've pieced this together like a quilt from various Jurassic media.
Well, and I mean, again, the fact that we're on another island, the other thing that they do that I'm really actually pretty tired of at this point is the whole idea of mutated dinosaurs, you know, and I felt like they did that in the world films already in a way that was actually interesting. And now it's just, I don't know. I don't want to see Distortus Rex that basically looks like the Rancor and in the alien had a baby.
Yes.
You know, it's just frustrating because, again, at this point, like, I don't care because they're not, you know, the beauty of the original Jurassic films and then Into the World films for the most part is that these animals represented things that used to exist that now exist again. And, you know, having these deformities, and it's like, I don't need to be reminded about how bad humanity is in mutating and distorting and messing things up like this. I'm kind of like over it, you know, and I didn't feel like this movie worked really, especially too with the Titanosaurus, that, you know, they do that wide shot where there's like 50 of them on this island. I'm like, there is no way this island has enough foliage to have all of these. I mean, those animals would be dead because they would have eaten the island bear years ago. I hate to say, it's one of those things where it just feels like we're just kind of complaining the whole time. But I think it's really frustrating because I am like you. Really, the only film in the Jurassic series that I just don't watch is 3. I just didn't really enjoy 3. All of the others I could watch, you know, pretty much at any time. And, you know, there's various rankings of which ones I like more or whatnot. But so coming into this, I'm predisposed to love this in the sense that I'm ready to love this. And I think the problem is that what they were giving us, again, it's just this remix. And when you've got characters played by Scarlett Johansson and Mahershala Ali, why aren't we doing more to make them interesting? Because they're good actors.
I mean, even for me, you know who the one actor who really sort of drew me in the most in this film? And I fortunately don't know his name only because the dad, he plays Mickey Haller, the Lincoln lawyer on the Netflix series.
Manuel Garcia Rulfo.
He is charming as all get out. And I came into the movie not knowing he was in it. So when he showed up on screen, I was like, oh, the Lincoln lawyer's in this movie. And he continued to have that sort of charisma that he has in the Netflix series that I was just like, okay, I'm along for the ride with you because I like you in your show that I just binged the first 3 seasons, you know, literally a month ago.
Well, and I think, a character that was interesting as well was the Henry Loomis character by Jonathan Bailey. And, you know, he's the one that kind of has this very paper-thin theme of, you know, trying to do something that actually matters and not, you know, just living for our own selfish motivations, which, great message, it's fine, you know. Yes, I get it, you hate ugly capitalists and, you know, yada, yada, yada. We could go down a whole rabbit.
But once again, but I didn't know anything about him to understand why he would think that way. And that was the problem with these characters. Yeah. It was, you didn't give me enough of, like, you didn't establish them. They just showed up and we needed to move along because, like you said, we need to get to the island and get to the dinosaurs. Before we move on, because we're kind of transitioning to some more character stuff, but something I did want to loop back to when you talk about dinosaurs is the one thing these films should benefit from is that we have discovered more species of dinosaurs since these books and these movies have come out. It's like, you don't need to create mutant dinosaurs. You could just show us dinosaurs that we haven't seen yet.
Yes, I agree. 100%. And, you know, I think the problem of discussing, like, characters in that sense is there's really nothing to discuss because they're not interesting. You know, there's mm-hmm. again, you know, you're talking about Ruben Delgado, the father, you know, and it's like, okay, you just make this dude come off terrible in the sense that he's taking his daughters on a trip across the ocean. Okay, that's fine. In a sailboat, people do that all the time. But the fact that you're anywhere close to where a mosasaur could be hunting is ridiculous. And it makes you seem like the world's worst parent. And yes, you should have your parental rights taken away. It's just like, the boyfriend thing, like I kind of gravitated in the sense that there is this whole part with that character where he is a person that nobody has ever looked to have any responsibility, right? He's just been treated as a doofus his whole life and he's lived up to that. You know, again, something that could have been really, really interesting as a thematic element to talk about the way in which young teenage boys are, you know, kind of like just put upon to the point where they don't know how to become men because they think they're just the world's worst thing, you know, and they've been told that they're the worst thing.
Because the dad has that one great line, which is don't crap on yourself. The world will do that for
you. Exactly. 100%. And so I think, again, there are great bits and pieces here throughout the entire thing for these characters to actually mean more. But unfortunately, the script doesn't really seem to care about the characters. And I think that is a true disservice to the story. And it really does hurt the movie because the rest of it then comes down to the dinosaurs. And in all honesty, I don't know if you felt like this, but I didn't think that the effects here looked much better than the things that I saw in the original Jurassic Park films. In fact, in some places, I thought they looked worse, and I never felt like these people were actually interacting with these characters. The lighting seemed off, everything, they didn't really feel real. And I was really very, very disappointed with the VFX in this film. And I couldn't believe in my eyes that I couldn't believe that a dinosaur was actually on screen with them.
Well, I don't go that far. I do agree with you that I don't feel like there's been any great leaps. It feels like we've reached the plateau. It's like, We've done what we're going to do when it comes to dinosaurs and the VFX. I mean, that's kind of also what made Spielberg's original film so incredible was how much they used real life animatronics. Like, they look so real because, well, there was something there. You know, it's,
right.
It's I while I don't have the harsh criticism of the VFX like you do, I will agree with the statement that there has been no leaps or bounds. But once again, did there need to be? Like, haven't we kind of reached the point where, well, this is what a dinosaur looks like on screen? So, and the only thing I did appreciate was, along with the scientific research that's come along, is how they've continued to improve the texture and the skin and kind of the feathery, like they've continued to make the dinosaurs look more like what we think dinosaurs actually look, based on fossil records, like what the texture of their skin, that those, yeah, those feather things that kind of goes into the, yeah, theory that they kind of evolved, yeah, into birds kind of deal. I was enjoying seeing those kind of details on screen as the franchise has progressed. But yes, there is no great leap in technology for dinosaurs, yeah, in these movies.
Well, and I think even just with the action sequences, the only one that truly stood out to me was the one that was taken straight from Crichton's book, which, you know, the whole sequence with the T-Rex underwater swimming in the boat and all that. I was like, it was great to actually finally see that, you know. I've always wanted to see that. And yet, yeah, I mean, it would just go in and out of me kind of like actually believing that they're really being chased by a T-Rex, you know. And I think, honestly, the worst offender for me, though, was when Dr. Loomis is standing there with a titanosaur. And even though he's touching a thing, every time they kind of pull to a wide shot, those dinosaurs don't composite with the people. The compositing work is just not good. They don't feel like they're in the same place because the lighting feels so off for the dinosaur characters and the human characters, and the compositing that should be done to meld that together to make it seamless just didn't feel like it was there, which is I found to be incredibly disappointing. And so, yeah, I just was kind of surprised because I felt like the world movies, especially just having also watched Dominion, I mean, those sequences I felt like with the dinosaurs were great. Like that sequence where Claire is having to crawl on the ground to get in the water and there's that dinosaur that's following her, you know, and
that's blind, yeah, and can't see her.
And it's just like hovering over the... I mean, that sequence is terrifying and scary because there isn't a point in that sequence where I don't believe that that animal is not on screen with you, even though it's not, right? That's what I need for this film. And there were very, very few places that I felt like that was actually the case. And even when I did, it was like, oh, well, that's the kitchen sequence from, you know, Jurassic Park, you know,
or the finale at the convenience store, which is from Lost,
exactly,
World, like the book,
yes,
Lost World.
Exactly.
That's the, like, because in the book, they don't, the T-Rex doesn't make it to land. Right. That's how the book ends. And so it's, yeah, I get what you're saying. There is a part. So I've heard some rumors, and also I'm going to try to pull a lot of strings together here, so please work with me here. I was shocked to see the credits that David Koepp, who wrote the original, yes, Jurassic Park, mm-hmm, is the credited screenwriter, yep, for this movie. And I also heard the rumor that Gareth Edwards was a late addition to the project as a director. Now, what makes me curious, and I always feel this way when I see a screenwriter for a film that I know they're a good screenwriter because I've seen their other work and I know what good work they can do. I always question, because I've also been reading a lot of David Mamet's nonfiction lately. And it's always interesting when you have a guy who doesn't give two Fs, who's going to tell you how it is. And as a screenwriter will tell you what it's like in Hollywood when your work is taken away from you and what people will do to it, and yet they'll still slap your name on it, no matter how much they change it. So there's part of me that wonders if there was a script that David had, or did David actually write this, and this is just like, like it was just kind of cobbled together, and the Writers Guild, just because it was maybe some of his previous work. Now, that I don't know, but I just find it odd that he's the credited screenwriter. I keep saying credited because, once again, I also know how shady the Writers Guild can be. And yet this doesn't feel like the quality of his work that he's done in other films. And then also you got Gareth Edwards coming in kind of last minute. And I know the work he can do. And I'm just like,
well, it's
was this kind of slapped together at the last minute? And that's why all these things just do not work.
So that's the thing that I think is interesting. From what I've heard, this is Kep's movie, and this was his idea, basically, is that he wanted to kind of go back to the feeling of the original Park films and try to make it scarier and all that, and bring all that back, which, okay, I get that desire. I don't think you did that. Second thing is that, you know, I know Gareth Edwards is a great director because he did Godzilla, which was wonderful. Really amazing. Well done. And the VFX work in that is stellar. And then he also did The Creator, which is an incredible film that looks amazing. So I...
on a shoestring budget.
Exactly. So I know that these things can be done. And that's what's kind of frustrating, is that to see a movie like this that I know that they spent so much money on turn out the way it does, I don't really understand. And on top of that, I got to ask you this, because obviously Jurassic Park, one of the hallmark and I would say cornerstones of the Jurassic Park universe, the Jurassic World universe, was the fact that the soundscape was designed by the master of music for film, John Williams, and he gave us the sounds of Jurassic Park in music. And of course, I mean, it's indelible to the series because his beautiful melodies and his wonderful action music is just so inextricably linked with this series. So here, Alexandre Desplat comes in to do the music, and he uses some of the original themes from the Jurassic Park series, leaves most of the world themes on the cutting room table, and did the music add anything or subtract anything from the film, or did it just kind of feel like, yeah, somebody came in and kind of played around with John Williams, and this is what we got?
That one. That one. I mean, every time, it is a personal gripe of mine that anytime John Williams has touched anything, and when someone tries to come after him and just use his stuff, it just sounds like, oh yeah, you know how to use the theme you wrote, but you don't know how to dress it up with the rest of the music. All you seem to be able to do is recycle the theme over and over again in a way that goes, hey, do you remember this theme? You know, it happened with the composers who came after him on Superman. It happened with the composers who came after him on Harry Potter. I mean, pick a... the only time it didn't happen was Star Wars and Indiana Jones, because he wrote every one of them. Yeah. There was no one who came after him. It was just him.
Well, you know, I'm thinking through somebody who I felt like actually did a really good job. It's one of the, I would say, actual hallmarks and one of the praise points for the film Superman Returns. John Ottman's score is phenomenal, and mainly because it sounds as though John Williams wrote it, but he didn't. and he plays around with John Williams' themes, kind of does some of his own things with it, so it's seamless. But the orchestration, and this is the thing, the orchestration is what matters if you want to be able to pull in that. And not everybody is good at the orchestration with this type of work. And I don't think this is not bad. It's not. It's not a bad soundtrack. I've listened to it by itself. I think it's fine. I don't think, again, you know, it doesn't do what you would kind of hope it would do, which is kind of elevate the material. It just kind of is there. And again, no disrespect, you know, to Desplat. It just lacks the thing that you would kind of hope that you would get from some of these scores. And in all honesty, Michael Giacchino, I kind of said some of the same things in some of his scores that he did for the World Series. Some of those were better than others. And yet, yeah, I mean, it is just frustrating because there are composers out there that I feel like have done this well. I also feel like John Powell, who did the score for Solo, did a really good job with feeling so much like a Williams score and integrating the theme that he wrote for Han Solo into the score and then utilizing different themes. You know, so there are guys who can do this, right? So,
well, and Giacchino also did it with Rogue One.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So it's, agreed.
It's been done. It just, but I think the point, though, is that when it's been done, it's been so rare that we can point to specific instances. It's an exception, not a rule.
100%. So, was there, before we kind of like get to the ratings, because this has been one of those where it feels like I don't want to just continue to harp on the things that I don't like. Was there anything that you stood out to you in the film that you did really like, that you really enjoyed, you thought was well done, and you almost, you could pinpoint and say, oh, if we had had more of that, I would have really maybe keyed into this movie much more?
Unfortunately, as the movie exists, it was one of those movies that while I was sitting there, I just felt myself starting to cross my arms and just be like, when is this over? And I don't know. Because like I said, so much of the movie was just, I think my issue is, I don't think there's anything in this movie, if there was more of it, would have improved my viewing experience. And I hate being this person, but I feel like what I wanted was a different movie. I didn't need a variation of this movie. I just needed a different movie. Like, this was not the story. These were not the characters that was going to compel me. And I hate that because it's a Jurassic movie. I want to see big dinosaurs on screen. You know, but now I feel like the world that Jurassic World Rebirth is describing, which is a world where we've moved on from dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, just stop. Just stop making these movies.
Well, and so, you know, the interesting part of the World Series, especially the first film, right, was this whole commentary on humanity, right? That we easily tire of things. We lose the wonder very quickly. We immediately
get bored.
We get bored, right? And so I think that's the thing that was really kind of fascinating with this whole thing. And in a lot of ways, you know, it kind of mirrors the way in which all franchises, you either find a way to keep the audience clicked in, you know, locked in, as the kids say these days, or you lose them. And a lot of the ways to do that is just to create more and more spectacle, right? And to really kind of lose the storytelling. And what's fascinating about this movie is that is what happened, I think. We actually lost the storytelling so that there isn't anything actually interesting happening. And as an adult, I know kids love dinosaurs and this movie's made a ton of money already, right? But I don't see this series continuing after this. I don't think that this is a rebirth. I think that this is, a nail in the coffin for this series. And it won't be because they're going to make another one. But I don't know how or why they would, because where the story is left after this, how do we keep getting people to go back to these places? You know, it just...
Right. Especially since you put them at the equator, you gave them a very specific reason for going there in this movie. Well, yeah. They've achieved that. And you've also killed off so many characters that it's like, are you going to make sequels? Like, the hallmark of the previous trilogies are these recurring characters who keep on getting in these situations. I don't see why Scarlett Johansson's character or Jonathan Bailey's character get involved in another shenanigans after this.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's one of those places where Dominion was the natural end. And in all honesty, Dominion kind of reminded me of, you know, kind of like the end game of the Jurassic series. And then we just keep making things, you know. Endgame was the perfect end for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then they just kept making things without a plan on where to go. And that's almost what I feel like is happening in this series. Like, you took away anything interesting, and now you've just made it where people have to keep going back to places where the very small amount of real estate that dinosaurs now exist on this planet, to keep creating convoluted reasons for that to happen, you know, just makes humanity even dumber and stupider than some of the characters that were in this movie. And I guess if people want to see that, that's great. I don't know if I would necessarily be a part of those then who would go to see those. So, Scott, I'm really interested, though, where do you end up on a scale of 5 out of 5 mutant dino eggs? What are you going to give this?
I landed on a 2. This was a 2 for me. Like, I told my wife that because she and the kids were out of town because I had to work, so they went on vacation. So I got to go see this movie by myself. And I almost told her as a way of justifying not going to see this movie with her. I was like, honey, don't worry. It's not good. And I'm not even going to buy it when it comes out on home video. Like that's a... And my wife, knowing me, went, oh. Like, for me not to buy a movie when it comes out on home video, that's an indictment in my house. But that's where I am with Jurassic World Rebirth. Mm-hmm. I've got the nice 4K Dolby Vision Steelbook reissues they just did of the Park Trilogy and of the World Trilogy. I'm good. As far as I'm going to be concerned, the Jurassic franchise ended with Dominion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. What's funny is that this film feels so much like The Force Awakens. It's just a remix, and everybody, I'm seeing so many people, you know, it's making so much money, and everybody, I'm just like, but it's not good. It is absolutely a 2, my friend. And it's so funny because I feel like we didn't talk about this before. I didn't really know necessarily where you were coming in.
Just saw my rating on Letterboxd.
But I didn't know how you felt about the movie and why you were there. But what you said about the fact that you're not buying this film, I'm right there with you. I don't need to own this film. There's absolutely nothing in this that I would need to have on my shelf because I never want to see it. My wife didn't even come with me because she was like, oh, I don't think that's going to be good. And I was like, well, it's dinosaurs eating people. It's going to be great. No, it wasn't. And so, yeah, it's disappointing. And hopefully here in the 602 Club, we'll have, you know, maybe some better luck with some of the other movies that are coming out here this summer. We've got Superman coming up. We've got, of course, Fantastic Four, things like that. So join us for those episodes. But Scott, you know, if people wanted to catch up with you and see what else you've got going on these days, and maybe, you know, where they can find your, you know, reviews for films and stuff, where can they find you?
Well, on X, you can find me at ScottDC27. On Vero, you can find me at Scott McClellan. And on Letterboxd, you can find me under Scott McClellan and ScottDC27. Once again, I really don't know how you find people on Letterboxd, because I just find people posting on Letterboxd and then I follow them. But hey, give me a follow. You can actually find me on my various socials. You can find a couple of things that I just published yesterday and this morning as of this recording, because I did go to that Amazon Prime early access of Superman. I got my wife to record a first reaction video when we got home from the theater last night, and that is on YouTube at the Squadcast Media channel on YouTube. So check that out. And then if you go to my letterbox, you can find a fully written, and when I say fully written, I mean like paragraphs, review of Superman. I've got it pinned to the top of my X account. And there's a link in that review to the video with my wife. And so, like I said, X, YouTube, Vero, Letterboxd. And then, of course, as I usually mention, every Wednesday night over at the Film Junkie YouTube channel, you can catch Dave and me talking about the DC Animated Universe on the DC Fanimated stream. We are at, by the time this drops, we will be into the final three episodes of Superman the Animated Series, and we'll be starting the second season of Batman Beyond.
Nice. And you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. If I'm on that network, just search for that name. Of course, Letterboxd and all those places. You can also find me here on the network outside of the 602 Club with a lot of great Star Trek talk there with Chris Jones. So I hope you'll check all those shows out, as well as being over the Nerd Party Network, where I'm talking with John Mills about Star Wars each and every week on Aggressive Negotiations. And you can also find me on a completed show called Owlpost with Drag Kaufman, as we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. But thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now, you hear? ¶¶